Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. My name is Jen, and this evening we actually have some quite sad news to share with people. Christopher Kunda, who was a member of the cooperative in Living Compassion in Cantalomba, died on Saturday night of complications of AIDS. And so we decided this evening that we wanted to come together to kind of do a little tribute to Christopher and recognize and honor his life and his contributions to Living Compassion. And so Sherry and some of my fellow monks have gathered to do that this evening. And we also received a beautiful email today from the team over there. They knew we were going to do this tonight, and they wanted to share some of their thoughts about Christopher as well. So I thought I would start with some of those. So this first one is from Veronica, who people probably remember from blogs. And she said, "He was hardworking and loved his children. She remembers that each time he was eating, he would leave some food for the children. He was also a caring man. She remembers that he took in Josephine's relative when everybody else abandoned him because he was sick. He took care of him until he died. He also took in Josephine's sister-in-law and was taking food for her when she was admitted to hospital." Margaret says, "He was a man that respected others, both young and old." Brenda shared, "It will not be easy to replace him as he was a very hard worker." And Beauty said, "He was a quiet man who never had differences with anyone." Audria, who is the woman who people may remember, she just joined the cooperative about a month or so ago after she took in some abandoned children in the community, and she wrote, "Though I only worked with him for less than a month, I got to learn that he was a hardworking and wonderful man." Peter wrote, "He was fun to work with and had a great sense of humor, and I learned a lot from him." Reuben wrote that he was a friend to all. And then Teresa said, "He was a dedicated worker and quick to respond to any task assigned to him. His expertise will be missed, and it will take a lot of time to heal from his passing." And so I thought I might start with you, Sherry, and just ask you what you remember about Christopher and what you want to share about him.
Yeah, well, do we have any pictures of Christopher without his hat on?
We actually do. We put something together today to go up on what we call Moyunda's blog, so where Moyunda reports back, and we put a bunch of pictures of Christopher up there so people can check that out on the website, and we did find some of him without his hat on.
Because that's what I remember. Yeah, I mean, you could look out across the property, and there's Christopher, because he's got that squash hat on his head all the time.
Yeah.
And, of course, he just has a special place in my heart, if for no other reason, that he's baby Sherry's daddy.
Yeah.
And so, of course, Josephine has a special place in all of our hearts as the, you know, the person who really drew us most completely into the work in Cantalomba. Teresa, yes, absolutely, as the person who you know, who fosters it, cares for it, and that sort of thing. But Josephine was the one who came forward and said, you know, I hope you'll help me create a better life for my children.
And yeah, she was the one who was willing to really speak up and say what was needed.
Yeah, tell her story and that sort of thing. And then, of course, she was a widow at that point, and two of her children had already died. And then when she and Christopher found one another, it was another chance for both of them to have a family.
Mm-hmm.
And then to have baby Sherry, and then Emmanuel, is that the...
Yeah, mm-hmm. Emmanuel, who's not even a year, he's still quite young.
Yeah, and so it's just, he's just always been there.
he's always
been so much a part of everything that was happening there.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I've talked to Teresa a number of times over the last few days, and that's one of the things I get from hearing from the other team members, and especially from Teresa, of just how, you know, how focused he was and how dedicated to his work, and just She said even times when other people would be sort of chatting and doing their thing, there was Christopher just focused on the task, doing what needed to be done.
Yeah, and on his children. You know, it was time to eat.
Yeah.
You know, he would often be there eating, and the kids would be eating with him. And
Which was, it's quite unusual culturally to see that. And I was always, in fact, Alex found a video that we have of Christopher eating with baby Sherry, and it's so cute. And I remember that day distinctly, just seeing he and Linkson, who is the fellow who came in to do the Pulumusa stoves, his granddaughter and Christopher sitting there with Sherry, and just adorable, you know, really taking the time, making sure they're eating, and do you want more, and how, you know, just, oh, so cute. And the other thing I remember is that when we took that group photo, I guess it was last March, when we had the whole cooperative come and take a photo, Christopher picked up baby Sherry and held him. I think he was probably the only man holding a baby in the whole picture. So that's neat.
You know, I haven't thought about this, and I know it's not the subject of this evening, and other people have things to say. And I wonder if part of the work that we're doing there, all of us as a big community, opens a space up for that kind of thing. That
yep.
is so culturally
yep.
not seen, and yet we do see it, and increasingly we see it there. And, of course, guys like Christopher are leading the way.
Yeah, I think that's so true, Sherry. And in an interesting kind of a way, Christopher's death is such a reminder of how transient really we all are, this whole thing is. And so how could it be about anything else other than just offering an opportunity for people to live in the way that their hearts want to live? And so us being there and modeling something that might be really, really different than what people are used to, and having that be an example for anyone who has that in their heart but would never have found a place to express it is just such a neat gift. So I have some of my fellow monks here as well. I wonder if, Dave, you might want to share some.
Sure. Yeah, it's interesting to hear the conversation. You know, Christopher was very quiet, and also he had almost no English. I've been to Africa a number of times and spent a lot of time sitting nearby Christopher and not saying anything. And always enjoyed his energy. And the word that comes up for me is respect, because it's a lot really along the lines of what you were just saying, because, you know, the men in Cantalomba in general struggle. And, you know, there's a lot of alcoholism and just various difficulties that folks get into, because, you know, it's just a difficult place for everybody there, and the men don't really have a place to be in the difficulty that's going on. And I respect all of the men in the cooperative who have kind of made a way of doing that, and respect Christopher in particular for, like you guys were saying, you know, willing to kind of allow the let go of some of the cultural, gender-based kind of things that are there that get in the way to let those things go. I was thinking actually today of, you know, memories of Christopher, and one of my favorites is we had been there and we had just, the sewing cooperative had just produced aprons out of Chitenge, so they're, you know, really bright colors and everything, and not something, I don't imagine something a man would typically wear in that community. And so we got all of the guys to try them on. And it was funny. Was it Ruben who mentioned his sense of humor? I actually hadn't thought of that, but Peter. Oh, is it Peter? Yeah, it's true. And because I can remember Christopher with this, you know, sort of a how to describe it, kind of like a sly grin on his face, you know, wearing this really bright apron. Yeah. So, but it's true what people are saying. You know, he was always on the job, and he was the first one on his feet generally when it's time to do something. And just, I don't know, just a lot of respect for the man and what he was able to do in the circumstances that he had.
Thanks for that, Dave. I think Alex had something quick he wanted to add, too.
Yeah, thanks. I really relate to what everyone has said about Christopher, and my favorite memory of him was when we were in Cantalomba and we were just starting to make our own pulumusas, and everybody was talking about doing it tomorrow and rather than right away. And Brian, when we were unloading the oil drums for it, he said, let's work on it now. And Christopher was the first one up. And as a matter of fact, I think he was the only one up at that moment and started carrying stuff. And both he and Brian were modeling, being focused and grounded. And I just, that's what I come up with when I think of Christopher, is just that he was not about fooling around. He was right there in it. You'll see those pictures of him sitting on the oil drum if you go to Muyunda's blog. You know, he just, I mean, that's my memory of him, was just show him and he's on it. And that's what I really appreciate most about Christopher.
So great. It's sort of putting everything together, what everyone has said. It's a neat middle way, isn't it? Completely focused, right there doing what he's doing, but this great sense of humor too. So just sort of a real presence.
Yeah, very sensitive too. You know, that video of him with baby Sherry was the one that stuck out for me the most. When he, you know, it's, if you look at it, he's passing the food to her, and just, it is completely rare. Those two guys were the only ones there with their kids, and it was just sweet.
Okay, well, thanks, everyone. Anything else from anyone before we pass it over to Michael and Sherry? All right. Thanks, Michael. Passing it over
to you.
Jen. Great show.
Great.
Thank you, Jen.
Thank you, Jen. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
I didn't expect that, and it was very moving for me.
I hadn't realized that the pictures were up, and so I confess I took that little transition time to go see the pictures of.
Yes, they're beautiful. I enjoyed that.
So here we are.
Here we are.
Glad to.
Was there more, Sherry? I didn't hear the end of your
just
sentence
always
there.
Glad and grateful to be here. It's what you know, what Jen was saying, and that perspective that we always have of we just don't know. We just don't know. Certain no information,
yeah.
That you know, Christopher was going to die, and never have any information about any of us, how long we have.
Yes. Sherry, you are cutting out a little bit every few seconds or so.
Wow. Hmm.
I can hear you. I can hear you better now.
I don't know what to say. I'm on the best phone I have.
Great.
Let me know.
Great.
if it keeps going, I'll call back in.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Great. And I have some announcements here. On October 21st and 22nd, that's a Friday night and all day Saturday, Creative Power in Life and Art, Finding Your Creative Muse, Exploring Your Creative Path. This is a retreat with Sherry Huber and Jenny Fox at Namaste in Felton, California.
Yes. And, you know, of course, we're busy planning all of the details of it at this point, and I have to say it's exciting.
Great. Great. And also on Saturday, October 22nd, is another one-day at-home working meditation retreat guided by the monks.
Also exciting.
Also exciting. And the following Saturday, October 29th, is guidance day for monthly donors with appointments by phone throughout the day. And just a couple days after that, for the month of November, it's time to feel good. The third version of the class, right, with you, Sherry?
Yes. And again, all three of them are going to be happening, right? So,
yes.
You know, often people will say, oh, yeah, I did that. Well, no, actually, nobody has done this. Because if you did part A, then you're ready for B. If you've done A and B, you're ready for C. And so there's something new for everybody, no matter where they are in the process. And it's, you know, it's just... it's the self-mentoring, the recording and listening, and it's support for continuing that unbelievably transformative practice.
Great.
I'd love to hear from people, of course, if they would be honest with me, you know, which sometimes people hesitate to do. But, you know, we do something like that It's been a year, right? Has it just been 1 year, 2 years, or forever?
Yes.
So we do something like the self-mentoring, and people just have these huge breakthroughs and transformative experiences all over the place. And then slowly over time, the voices talk a person out of doing it. They're doing it less and less, and then it's fading into the background. And then people feel kind of bad about it and guilty and say don't want to talk about it and like that. And so if we continue to avail ourselves of these kinds of opportunities, then we're really doing something very proactive to thwart karmic conditioning's efforts to regain control of our lives. And so I hope everybody will get back to it. And even, you know, if it's been a while and it's slid to the back burner as a practice, that's great. Take it up again and have another one of those huge transformative processes happen and continue to do that until it's just a regular part of life and the voices couldn't talk you out of it no matter what.
Yes, and with so many offerings from the monastery and from you, Sherry, it makes it really easy.
Yes.
You know, it's not like you need to wait a long time to start practicing again.
Precisely. And so the thing that I like so much about self-mentoring, you know, you're doing the recording and listening practice, and you do the at-home meditation day. Great. And you're recording and listening about that. It takes whatever practice opportunity you're participating in to a whole new level. And so guidance, you know, there you are. You're getting guidance from one of the monks, and then you get to record and listen about that. It deepens everything.
Yes. Yes, it's great. And then on November 5th, a Saturday, that's 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., awareness. It's not what you think. A workshop with you, Sherry, in San Diego at Marina Village.
I have. I'll tell you this, like the recording and listening, and periodically there are some things that happen that are just such powerful tools in practice that I get very excited about them start, you know, introducing them wherever I go in the country. And one of those came up in the precepts retreat. And so at this retreat in San Diego, this workshop in San Diego, I'm going to teach it to people, have people do the experience of it. And so that's another little commercial for making your way to that one. It's fun.
Great.
It's good. It's big. It's big. If I
do
say it to myself, it's big.
Great. Great. Another big thing in an already big practice.
Yep, yep.
Yes, yes, very fun.
Well, and that's a big thing. You know, the other thing that I talked about like this was the What You Practice retreat, where I said this is unlike anything else. Now, this experience for many people, the one that I said I'm going to do with folks in San Diego, is unlike anything that we've ever done before, and it has tremendous potential for making life a very different thing. The What You Practice retreat was a showstopper. Would you agree?
Yes.
Truly, like nothing we've ever done before, and
yes.
And just takes practice to a whole new level. And a reminder for people that doing this Time to Feel Good email class is a prerequisite for doing that retreat. So if people heard about that and thought, oh, curses, I didn't do the email class. It's the prerequisite. Here's another opportunity to do that. And we have a couple of those scheduled for, I think, next summer. So
great.
Don't
great.
Be left out.
Can I give a brief testimonial for what you
please.
Practiced? So my experience of it was that I brought all my conditioning and I put it all out there. Nothing was left in the corners as too scary or I can't bring this out. And it's really great to know that I've done that.
Yes.
That I've looked at all. I brought it all out. I didn't hide any of it. Can't feel the emotion coming up right now. It's just really powerful.
Yes. Yes. And even though it might continue to try to work on you or whatever,
yes.
No, it doesn't have anything in its arsenal that it's going to be able to spring on you, because you've seen it all.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yes. It's liberating.
Yes, yes. And to have the recordings from that retreat to lean on, you know, I don't have to try to remember that I saw through this.
Yes.
You know, it's there.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So thank you.
Thank you.
And
I think we go to Santa Sabina, right?
Yes, exactly. Take the words out of my mouth. I Conscious Compassionate New Year. It's a retreat with you and the monk, Sherry, at Santa Sabina Center in San Rafael, California. And that's in the hills in beautiful Marin County. It includes daily workshops and meditation, scenic walks, individual guidance with Sherry, yoga, and delicious vegetarian food.
It's a party.
It's a party. And that party is December 27th, Tuesday, through Sunday, January 1st. And I'd like to remind our callers to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes.
Thanks, Michael.
And thank you. First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. This is Paula from South Carolina.
Hey, Paula. How are you?
I'm really great.
Good. What's going on?
Well, I guess the first thing I just want to share is that I did take the email class a year ago and have been to two of the what you practice retreats.
Uh-huh.
And it continues to be a very important part of my daily practice, and I just can't say enough for the benefit that I feel that I have experienced as a result of recording and listening. So I'm
great.
Thankful for that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, me too, and thank you for saying that. I'm pretty enthusiastic about practice in general, and this particular practice, the recording and listening, I just so wish everybody could realize how powerful and simple and easy it is to do. You know, if people know that, then it's between them and their God, them and the voices, or however it shakes out. But just to know what is possible for us, it's life changing.
I agree. It certainly is. I guess in the next couple of minutes, I just wanted to share a little about what's been going on in my life. When I saw you, I think it was in May in North Carolina, I was getting ready to retire the end of June.
Yes, I remember.
Which I did, which has been fantastic.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Interestingly, I think that it's also been really significant time for me to use the practices that I like, the recording listening practice, and just my meditation practice in general. My husband's mom became very ill right before I retired and did not get better, and she died the end of July, which is about a month after I retired. And my husband's an only child, so I was pretty consumed by that caretaking part of life at that time. And in that same period of time, my own mother also declined significantly, and I needed to help out in getting her out of her home where she was living and into a place where she could have care 24 hours a day. And I'm 500 miles away from there, and it's been is kind of taking care of, being involved in her caretaking up until about a month ago, pretty intensively. It really just challenged an awfully lot of, well, I guess that more accurately what it did is it was a, you know, big opportunity for conditioned thinking to come into play. And I don't know what specifically I need other than maybe just some guidance or encouragement or reminders about how to stay centered and remain present during this during this time when it's, you know, just life is just very stressful. So I guess that's about it. I don't know that I need a specific thing. I just wanted to move to conditioning that I could call and ask for help.
So a couple of things about that. One, the making the contact is often all we need. You know, that's the thing that brings you back to you. You know, there's that person inside who's dealing with really difficult, painful stuff, and she could use some support and care. And if those voices are allowed to say, no, you've got to remain on your own, that's a very rough place to be. But if that person can realize that she needs support and little care and that sort of thing, and she gets to reach out and connect with people who understand and are there, and that's, then it's just a whole different way to be in life. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do, Sherry. And I think, you know, one of the other things that has been so helpful to me is that when I came back from the retreat in May, I'm feeling a little emotional just talking about my two moms. I did the Making the Change for Good 30-day retreat.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm coming into the, I just started it again 6 days ago to do my third 30-day retreat. And that has also just been a gift to have that, find a lot of support. So
yeah, that you have these, what occurs to me is, that it's such a trust-building experience that you can count on yourself. That and by that I mean that that those parts of you who need the support and assistance can look to you, and you will pick and choose from what's available right then to support that person. That you're going to be there. So you're going to do a 30-day retreat to help and support. You're going to do recording and listening. You're going to call into the radio show. You know, maybe you're going to do an at-home meditation day, or you're going to whatever it is that feels like it would be the most supportive for people right then. Those folks inside can trust you to be there, offering that care for them.
Yeah, and it really works. I just noticed my clock, and I know that I've used more than my time, but
don't worry about it. It you know, it's an approximation thing. it's not a hard and fast rule.
Well, I thank you so much, Sherry, and all of the monks that I've had an opportunity to talk to on the phone for guidance for home working retreats, and I am, conditioning likes to tell me that I say I'm grateful too much, but I don't think that's true.
I don't think it's possible to say that too much. I find myself saying I'm happy, I'm grateful, I'm excited over and over and over again. And I am so happy and grateful and excited that I feel that way that I just don't think I can express it too much. So I'm right there with you.
Thank you so much. I'm going to let someone else have a chance to talk.
All right. Stay in touch, huh?
I will.
All right. Good night.
Bye now.
Thank you for joining us, Paula. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And we have another caller, Sherry.
Right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Lisa from Oakland.
Hey, Lisa.
Hey. Wow, I'm amazed. Oh, sorry.
No, you're amazed you got on?
I'm just amazed I made it through the conditioning today to actually call.
Oh, yeah. That's even before getting on the show, right? There are many hurdles.
Yeah, I think there's a part of me that there would have been voices saying, yes, I didn't get on, you know, today. but I'm really glad that I did. And I feel like I've had a lot to practice with today, but I feel very alive. And I think the last bit of conditioning was hearing about Christopher. I got really quite moved. And then also a lot of voices that I didn't know him, and that it's self-indulgent for me to be moved, and that I would probably cry if I got on, and so I should hang up.
Yeah, right.
And
good job not falling for that.
Yeah, well, I almost did, but I was, yeah, but I don't, right, I don't want to honor somebody's life by not being present in my life. I want to show up.
Yeah, and I was looking at this with Paula, and I just loved it when she said my two moms. You know, isn't that what everybody dreams of, that, you know, the partner's parents will really be your parents, you know? And in the Buddhist tradition, and probably a lot of others, but this is the only one I know anything about, At a time when someone is making their transition, which is how we talk about the period of time from death until, on to whatever is the next form that is inhabited, for, you know, all of the energy that has, in this case, made up Christopher or made up Paula's mother-in-law, or what we do is to acknowledge that person's life and the contribution that they have made. And so, you know, if it's a situation where it's a, you know, say a parent or a close family member or something like that, then there are lots and lots of situations to draw from, lots of memories, and, you know, a lot to be grateful for, and you know, it's part of the grieving healing process for the person who's still living. And the understanding is that the energy of that person is still kind of lingering around and is open to that information, can actually take it in. And so that it's really important to express what that person has meant, and the difference that they've made, the contribution that they were, you know, just whatever it is, the thank you for being the person you were and offering what you offered. And when you were saying that, I thought, and how extraordinary for Christopher to have that kind of effect in the life of someone that he would never even know existed. And
right.
And what a beautiful sense of connection for all of us. You know, now people all over the world are aware of Christopher and his life and what he meant to that community and his children, and we can reflect back to him the contribution that he was to us. All these people around the world.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm also grateful. I was grateful to be able to look at his pictures on the blog, on Myanda's blog, which I was able to do because I'm in front of my computer, and then to hear the monks reflect on things that they valued about him. And yeah, how amazing to hear all of that about somebody that I've never met, you know, but to be able to witness some of that.
Yeah. And to connect, because, you know, as we're sitting here having this conversation, people are dying all over the world.
Right.
And it's all of us. We're all here. We're all participating. We're all making the contribution that we're making. One day we won't be here any longer in this form. We'll be transitioning. And to know that there are people who are grateful for our lives and the contribution that we've made and the difference that, you know, it just, it's a hard thing to put into words, isn't it? Or put into words, but that such a strong feeling of the connection. You know, this year's Bridge Walk was all around participation. That was the word that we were connecting around, and that's what it is.
Right.
The contribution that we're here to make and participating in the way that we're participating. And so, you know, we hear about something that happens to somebody. I don't think it's self-indulgent at all to stop for a moment and just honor even the smallest connection with that human being.
Right, because connection is connection, right? I mean, it's not, I don't have to measure connection.
No. Karmic conditioning wants us to, right? That's what ego. Ego wants it to be. Well, you have these emotions about this group of people because they're in this relationship with you, and so that's appropriate. Other people, no. Other people, beyond that, no. You can't care about that. That's just silly. That's just a story. And the silliest part of all is if you actually were moved by, say, a scene in a movie or something like that. How silly is that? You would have tears about something.
Right.
It's
goodness, and what if it's not even a good movie? Then what? Right.
What does that say about you? And to realize that all we're doing is connecting with our, we can't even say our humanity, but it's what animates all of us. It's what animates all.
So it's bigger than humanity, because humanity is human, but it's bigger than that.
Yes.
Is that what?
Yeah, because you know, we love animals.
Right.
Many people love animals. We love. I'm sitting here looking at these extraordinary pine trees that grow right outside my my window, and I love them. You know, I love them, and it puts me, being with them, puts me in touch with that place in me that is love.
Right.
And the object is really quite irrelevant in the sense of, well, but that's a tree. I mean, that's not as important as actually, it's a manifestation of life, and I don't need to decide how important it is. I just love
it. And I've had some, I mean, over the course of my life, but especially after There Is Nothing Wrong With You work retreat that I did this year, and then from practice, my meditative practice has really increased, and I've had these moments after the retreat days where I just felt this kind of connection beyond what I had ever experienced, you know, and it was really powerful. And even when I'm not in that place, which I'm often not, I have that experience.
Yes, and that is such a good point, and it's kind of the connecting theme of all of this, because that's what we're going for. Right, to live in that place, not as anything to be judged by, and not as a kind of a competition, But we know that it's possible to live in the way we talk about it, to live in gusho, to live in the place of my heart and your heart are one, that interconnectedness of all life. And so that's what we're moving toward all the time. That's what we're choosing, to have our hearts open, to be more present, to be here, kind, away from negativity.
Beautiful.
It is, isn't it? It's glorious.
Thank you, Sherry. I'm aware I'm also way over my time too, but
Well, I'm having a nice time, so.
Thank you. Yeah, I feel
forgiveness from anybody else.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, and thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Good night.
Thanks. Good night.
Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
Bye.
What would you do if you knew you could not fail? How free would you be? How deep would you love, dear? What would you hear if you listened to your beautiful heart?
This music by Trish Bruxford Colligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net.
What if you bathed in an ocean of roses? What if you swam in a river of joy?
Hi, this is Scott from Porch Dog Software. Today we're talking with Lanny, one of Porch Dog's favorite clients. Lanny, what do you think Open Air listeners might want to know about working with Porch Dog?
Well, Scott, I think they might want to know that you write all kinds of software for Macs and iPhones and iPads and for all types of companies, big ones and small ones like mine. And you do your work with a lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah. You know, one of the things we love about Open Air is the energy and enthusiasm in every show. We try and get lit up about everything we do here at Porch Dog Software, too.
Everything?
Yep. Especially the things we don't like.
Sweet.
Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air. Sherry, we have another caller. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Dinah.
Hi, Dinah.
Hi. It's so great to hear your voice. I didn't get a chance to meet you when I was there last month.
Ah.
I came to the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat.
And I was away.
Yes, you were.
Well,
I think I might have seen someone using your dishes, though, so that could have been you.
That's true. Otherwise, I need to look into that, don't I?
But it doesn't prove much because I think I might have stole my neighbor's dishes once or twice while I was there.
Anything can happen.
Yes.
Well, it's
I'm
nice
so
to
excited.
Meet you.
I didn't expect to get through, and of course I'm going to repeat what other people always say, that now I don't have a plan of what to say.
Uh-huh.
But first of all, I have to say that the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat totally changed my life. It just was the absolutely best thing that I've ever done for myself. And I think, I can literally say that it saved my life. It makes me a little shaky just to say that out loud, but it's because it kind of takes me back to the experience I had when I was there, which was just so transforming. But the tools that I got there and the things that I learned and the process that I went through was just amazing.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. And it's one of those, don't you wish everybody in the world would do that for themselves?
I absolutely do. And ever since, I just have a whole new way of looking at people. Like you talked about with the last couple of callers, you just see everyone in a different light than you ever did before. So, and especially with the people that were there with me on retreat, it's just like I was madly in love with the people that were in my group in a way that I've never felt love before, a way that was just completely detached is the first word that comes to my mind, because it just felt so centered, so grounded, I guess, rather than in a needy way, which is where I would have usually gone with it.
Yeah. So there's the Ram Dass saying that I love so much, that to me speaks to what that experience. I love you as much as I've ever loved anyone in my life, and it doesn't matter if I never see you again.
I know. That is exactly it.
It's exactly crazy.
And most of all, that started from me. It came from a place in myself that I knew, you know, I have always known the concepts of self-esteem. I have probably more books on it than the library does. You know, I've just always been searching for something that would help me discover that I was worthy to be here.
Yeah.
And when I came to the retreat, I, you know, had some definite expectations of finding something to save me. I think a lot of people might look at it that way, where I just was hoping that this was going to be the answer. And I remember when I got there, my first response was, I'm going to discover how I can learn to not really care if people like me or not. And instead, I found out that it really was about me liking myself first, and then sort of that followed. I don't think I got that out exactly right, but it just was this weird shift.
Right. Well,
that allowed me to realize that it comes from inside of me and not from anything outside myself.
Yeah. So we're trained to try to get what we need from outside.
And, yes.
And we never can, and so we just conclude that, well, clearly there's something wrong with me because it looks like it's working for everybody else, but not for me. And
oh, absolutely.
And I'm desperate to have someone love me the way I want to be loved.
Yeah.
Then that magic shift happens, and suddenly you realize, whoa, I love me the way
yeah.
I've always wanted to be loved. And, oh, by the way, I love everybody else.
I know. It's like the relationship that I've been looking for my entire life
yeah.
has been inside of me the entire time.
Yeah.
And it's the relationship that can never leave me and destroy me the way that conditioning, you know, used those examples of, well, this proves that you're not
yeah.
a worthy human, because if you were, these people wouldn't have left you.
Yeah. Yep.
Really, the one that I really needed to find was me, and I can't possibly leave myself. So it's just
That's
the most
exactly
exciting
right.
news ever.
Yep. Yeah. And
I'm
and
just
that,
absolutely thrilled by it. So I do want to say that certainly the retreat changed my life in numerous ways, and I'm just so grateful to life that it landed me on your doorstep, because I think I signed up a week before the retreat happened, and everything just fell right into place from the moment that I signed up until the moment I left on the last day of the retreat. So I just am so grateful to life for bringing me there. So afterwards, now it's been about a month, and, you know, as you've kind of talked with other people, things kind of start to wear off and conditioning starts to sneak back in on you. And thank goodness that I have the recording and listening practice, because that has really allowed me to see things a lot more clearly. First of all, because the retreat gave me those tools to really be able to listen. But I'm discovering what a slow, creepy process it is. It just really sneaks up on me just little by little.
Yeah.
And one of the ways that it's done that, and it's going to be hard for me to say this because it's embarrassing to me, because conditioning is just so mean about it, is smoking. And I have to do it. I have to say it out loud, because I've hated myself for being a smoker. And I've been a smoker almost all of my life. And I had quit for a long period of time before I came on retreat. And what I had kind of realized was my last attempt to quit was kind of centered around you are a really horrible person if you continue to do this. And so it was like my one more thing to add onto the list of reasons that I should be hated. And so when I quit, of course, conditioning just found a whole other thing to start on me about. So it was just, you know, it dropped that and went on to something else. But it left this really big hole in my life. And so I'm bumping up against that change in my personality of, you know, conditioning telling me, well, who are you without this? You don't even know who you are. You've been, you know, this person your entire adult life. So how do you expect to make this change? And I'm just, you know, trying to deal with that level of discomfort that I feel when I bump up against something new like that. And this is a really powerful one for me. So I'm hoping, you know, just by saying it out loud, I feel a little bit lighter, but also maybe getting some advice from you on, you know, how do you deal with that discomfort? And
let me ask you this.
Yeah.
So you, how old were you when you started smoking?
Oh, gosh. So, you know, 16. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that might be a really important place to start.
That's a good idea.
They say with any kind of addiction, that when you quit, like with alcohol or drugs, and God knows, cigarettes qualify.
Yes.
Yeah. That emotionally you are the age that you were when you started.
Mm-hmm.
And so that might be a great person to start getting to know and spending some time with.
I agree. That's probably a really good plan. I have done some work with that person on some other levels, definitely on some anger levels, just being really angry about my childhood. So I haven't really addressed the habits that little person picked up to cope.
Yeah. So
basically,
getting to know her. So, you know, if the mentor had been there at age 16,
yes,
what might have happened to her? What might her life have been like? What other choices would she have made besides those cigarettes?
Exactly. And I think, you know, what pops into my head right away is just compassion for myself that I chose that route. I think I immediately want to go to this point of hating myself that I ever started it. That you know, idea of, well, if you had never picked those up, then you wouldn't be in this place that you are now. And I think that comes from conditioning, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, who of us doesn't know that?
Yeah, exactly.
If I'd been saving money all of my life, I'd be really rich now.
Exactly. It can be strung out 100 different ways.
Yeah.
You're so right.
Yeah.
You're so right. And then the idea that, you know, because like I said, I've been bouncing back and forth with it at this point, and, you know, just really listening to what conditioning is telling me and what pushes me to that event. You know, I used to think that I smoked purely for stress-related reasons, and now I find that I can be doing something I enjoy and love and, you know, am having the greatest time, and conditioning is like, well, wait, you need to go smoke now.
Yeah.
You know, it wants to interrupt my good time as much as it does a bad time. So it's really not, it's not even, you know, biased one way or the other. It's just doing the best it can to, like, take control.
Yeah.
And that's one of the great ways that it has to do it for me, because it is such a deep-seated, you know, it's been there for so long.
Yeah.
So what I've been doing on top of that, besides the recording and listening, and also, you know, really paying attention to what conditioning is saying to me, is doing the 30 days, the change book. I forgot what the exact title is.
Yeah. Making a change.
And I decided not to start immediately with quitting altogether. And I'm wondering if that is conditioning telling me that I can't do it, because what I did instead was set times of, okay, I'm going to wait this long in the morning and just listening and recording. And I, you know, make my cup of tea and I do my meditation practice. and all those things before I go to that, because, you know, you, I don't know if you're aware, but smokers are pretty adamant about first thing in the morning.
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm trying to start pretty small because it is such a deep-seated, you know, thing with me that even though I've managed to abstain for really long periods of time, it's been agony. It's been, you know, really painful. So I thought, well, maybe I'm allowing conditioning to kind of take over with this all-or-nothing business.
Well, my encouragement is to kind of lose interest in whether you continue to smoke or quit smoking.
Right.
But instead, truly, just focus on the process.
Yes, so what and that's really what I've been trying to do, yeah.
What happens when you this, what happens when you that, what if you, what if. And I think in that way of revealing how conditioning talks you into and out of,
yeah,
which you've already been working on, you'll get to the place where you really have legitimately lost interest in the subject of smoking, because you the issue of smoking, because the process is so interesting.
Absolutely. And I remember, you know, Jen said something during retreat about, until you really love yourself, you will just continue to kind of bump up against it and go back to it, because I'm not, you know, loving myself enough to want to leave that alone. And I think that that goes along with your theory is, you know, when you love yourself 100% completely, you just don't do those things to yourself anymore.
That's right. And
right?
And the phrasing that I would use for that is, so there is that young person who has issues about self-esteem and worthiness and all of that.
Yeah.
And until there is someone there who prioritizes her over everything else, she will continue to do the things that she has learned how to do to survive.
Exactly, exactly. And it is what has gotten me this far. So I have to be, you know, thankful for the methods that those people came up with to get me here. And like I said, you know, try to find some mercy, some compassion for the people who did that for me.
Yeah. And then it turns into a, so let's see how this goes. Let's try this.
Yeah, exactly.
And document it. Let's try that and document it. We'll do this. We'll do that. And it's all relationship.
Yes.
It's all
and interest. I really try to look at it as an interesting thing.
Yeah.
Like if I was, I try to, I think of it sometimes as if I'm observing someone else, because it makes it a little easier for me.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Another
sure.
16-year-old.
What say?
Another 16-year-old.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Like with the anger, I've done that a little bit, because I can relate in real life very well to troubled teenagers, because I was one, and certainly I can see where their anger comes from, and it helps me deal with my own. And it's I think maybe if I can bring the addiction side of the smoking thing into that as well, because I mean I feel so grateful that it's not so much worse, you know, that I am not addicted to alcohol and drugs and you know, living on the street or what have you. With as bad as my childhood was, that was a possibility. And you know, I'm I don't want to say I'm successful. That sounds strange to me, but you know, I'm okay. I'm alive.
Yeah, you're doing fine.
and I'm grateful
better.
For that. I'm grateful for every day I have.
Yeah.
That's something that, you know, with Christopher and Cantalumba passing away, that often comes across my mind when I'm dealing with this addictive process, is conditioning likes to tell me I'm going to live forever. I can do this anytime. I'm going to live forever. So, you know, I have all the time in the world to deal with that. And I just, you know, I'm getting more and more, probably because I'm getting older, but getting more and more that just is not the case. The only time I have is right now.
Exactly.
Yes. The only time that I have to live my life the way that I want to live it is right now.
Yes.
And that's kind of where that morning, the morning ritual came from, because I got a little insight with the idea that how you start your day is how you live your day, and how you live your day is how you live your life. And it just has been, it's given me, my hair is kind of standing up on end when I said it out loud again, because it just feels so powerful to just like break my day up into these little minutes. And I think with, especially with addiction, you kind of have to do that, because I can't say to myself, I'm never going to smoke again. I have to say, I'm only going to not smoke for this period of time.
Yeah.
And then those all string together, and pretty soon, you know, it's been months or years I haven't smoked again.
Yeah. All right. Well, you keep us posted on your progress, okay?
I definitely will. And I'm just going to hang on to the practice because, you know, conditioning likes to tell me that I should just throw it all out the window because I'm smoking. But, you know, I'm not going to do that. I just have to keep plugging along with it and trying.
If you're going to throw something out the window, throw conditioning out the window.
Do what?
Throw conditioning out the window.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
Keep practicing, even with this,
I hope you can confirm that even with addiction, there's never a good enough reason to hate myself.
Oh, exactly. And in fact, the only way, as you've noticed, addiction can keep a toehold is if it talks you into hating yourself.
Yes, and then it becomes that duality of, well, you're a big failure anyway, and then you just smoke more, and so on and so forth. So I don't know if that's necessarily what I wanted to address, but that seems to just have been what came right through. So I'm glad that I had the opportunity to talk to you about it.
Yeah. And
like I said, it just feels lighter to say it out loud because, you know, it's like my conditioning's dirty secret that I have, you know, this addiction thing going on. And so I need to have it out there. I need to say it.
Yeah. And keep us posted about it because that will keep the heat turned up. Under conditioning.
I will. And I'm exploring some other ways to practice as well. I tried to sign up for reflective listening, but it didn't quite work out. But I did put some things on Sangha Market today, so I'm excited about that.
Oh, good for you. That's turning my attention to that next. That's going to be my next big project. So I'm very grateful to hear you say that.
Yes, I went on today and looked, and I thought to myself, there are just not enough items on here, and I'm going to get busy and do a few crafty projects to put on there. So I made some great little handmade envelopes from recycled paper, so with 100% proceeds going to Living Compassion, of course.
Why, thank you, my dear. Thank you.
I'm so happy to do it. It's a great way to practice mindfulness and loving kindness, and it's just a great thing.
Yeah, good. Thanks for the commercial, too.
Well, I appreciate you so much, Sherry. I'm grateful that you have brought this practice to so many people and that you continue to share it, and you're just a true bodhisattva.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. One from one to another.
Thank you, Sherry. Have a fantastic evening.
All right. You too. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Dinah. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller here.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. This is Janice.
Hey, Janice.
From Dallas. Hi. Conditioning was just going, oh, shoot. It was hoping that I wouldn't get on. But I'm like, oh, shoot. It also wanted me to hang up because I was just at the retreat last week, right?
Yeah.
So
we just talked to you, for heaven's sake.
Exactly. So why would I call in? But I'm calling in because I committed to call in at certain times, and so
and you know,
that's what I'm doing.
It's crazy. You know what? Can we have too much connection?
I know.
Too much enjoying life? Too much participate? I don't think so.
Yeah, well, and, you know, hearing all the callers and hearing you and about everything was just bringing back the great memories from, you know, last week and everything. But and when I left, you know, conditioning was talking about people that talk about having backlash and all that stuff when they leave, and which I've never really experienced. I usually And this time, too, I really just sit in clarity for a while. It does seem to kind of fade away. And so, like, that part's truly exciting for me. And it's only been a couple of days, but I have truly been able to put my life into practice and, you know, follow a schedule. It's basically, as an exercise, we did the process map, and then we did a process map if the mentor did it. Hmm. And so I've been following that, and what takes the charge out of what I do during the day is I call it working meditation. So
there you go. That's it.
So it totally takes the charge out of it, and it turns out, I mean, because I trade, you know, the markets on a daily basis, and I was doing it rather in a suffering place. And now I was sharing how much energy comes up for me when I'm doing that. And with this new plan from the mentor, there's energy there, but there isn't much. I'm just doing what I do without all the suffering attached. So it's fabulous.
Yeah. And with that, in that, using the suffering, this will sound crazy, but you'll know what I mean, using the suffering as an indication that conditioning has taken over what you're doing, has taken over your working meditation.
Yeah, definitely, because I document at the end of the day, kind of evaluate how I did, and it's like my goal is, well, basically my goal is to be kind to myself during the working meditation.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing as like, I can only be kind to myself when I'm not listening to condition.
That's right.
Conditioning.
And so, if the voices have come in and taken over, then you know that you're no longer doing working meditation.
Yes.
And to me is a significant kind of a marker to keep our eyes on. You know, because if I am actually doing working meditation, then the whole point of it is to be present and kind. When it slips over into a story about how I did this or that or that's wrong or that shouldn't have, then I don't need to actually engage with that. I need to drop that and get back to working meditation.
Yeah, and that also, that it's not necessarily about accomplishing anything.
Oh, exactly.
I mean, I'm not saying that I'm not accomplishing something,
but that's
not the point. Right, exactly.
Yeah. So
it's all the charge out of it.
Yeah, I do the work to stay conscious and present and kind. And of course I get something done. But that's not the point. My success, how it goes, is not the point. Nothing about it is the point except staying present and conscious and kind. And
yes.
I happen to be practicing this particular thing in my working meditation.
Yes, and previously the process was all about the outcome.
Yeah, well, that's how it hooks us, right? That's
mm-hmm.
Because if you get a certain outcome, that means you're doing a good job. And if you're doing a good job, that makes you a good person, and therefore you're lovable, and you're going to
mm-hmm.
survive.
Yeah, exactly.
But if we turn that on its head and say, actually, the only thing that matters to me is, am I present and kind with this human being today? It just can't. You know?
Yeah.
I was as kind as I could be. I can see that I could have, that I got distracted. I got pulled into conditioning, and I left kindness. Okay.
Yeah. In my evaluation, I'm basically just for the last 2 days, evaluating whether I was kind to myself, you know? And I did have to sort of snap out of evaluating what I missed and didn't miss, but it's like, well, yes, I was kind to myself all during working meditation.
Yes, and in my evaluation, I can see if maybe I wasn't, if there were times when I got hoodwinked and I wasn't kind, and I can be kind now as I become aware of that.
Yes, yeah.
So that's the beauty of practice, right? We're never without an opportunity to be kind, to be loving, to be present, to be conscious. Because whatever is going on, we're here, and this is the opportunity.
Yeah. And it's also helpful. I break my day up so that I start doing something else. It's easier to come out if I happen to be identified with something. And I change activities, it's helpful.
And throw in a few little awareness exercises, right? To get here,
mm-hmm.
get in your body, participate with nature, come to your senses.
Yeah, and then I wanted to express the pure gratitude I have for everything that's being offered, for like the experience that I have is that I'm just walking around open and things just drop in. For example, when I left, the Transform Your Life assignment for the day was to look at what am I, and just the greatest things were dropping in. Like, just real quickly, I'll tell you, the first thing that dropped in was your love, your light, your joy, your all these things. And I might have been listening to conditioning because I was like, well, okay. And the next time during the day when I asked, I go, what am I? And what dropped in is, you're the same as everything else. And then I got a truer sense of, well, because like energy at the subatomic level, if we're all the same, I got a greater sense of, well, then I must be love and light and joy and like that. And then later in the day I asked it, and what dropped in is, you're both life and the thing that's moving the life. And I'm like, that is so cool, because it's sort of along the lines of what I was looking at the precept retreat. But anyway, it's just cool as could be to be walking around and have stuff like that drop in.
Yeah. And what you're articulating so clearly and beautifully is the be-all, end-all of practice. Because
yeah.
What you're doing is being present to life as the intelligence that animates you informs you. That's the best.
And, I mean, one of the hundreds of things I got at the retreat was that, the reward is not, you don't get a reward for the practice. Doing the practice is the reward.
Yeah.
Did I say that right? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like that, I was expressing the reward I'm getting as things just drop in. And just because I'm doing the practice, but...
Yes, yes, yeah, that we are rewarded by what we do, not because of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, anyway, thank you so much.
Keep having fun, huh?
Okay.
All right.
You too.
All right, take care.
Okay,
stay in touch.
Thanks. Okay,
all
bye.
Right. Thanks, Janice. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Janice. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, it's been a great pleasure to be with you and all the callers tonight.
And with you, sir.
Thank you.
And
I'm sending lots of love and energy over to Africa as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Christopher, as he goes on his way, as he makes his transition.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
And I'll talk with you next week.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.